and move on to case number 5, Ridings against Riverside Medical Center. Mr. Betke.
Good morning. The defendant, Riverside, has admitted repeatedly that Janet Ridings was on FMLA reduced schedule leave from her return from surgery on February 3, 2003 until the very day she was fired, May 13, 2004. The district court here largely ignored that admission and turned it merely into an argument, that's how he characterized it, by Ridings. But it's not Ridings' argument. It is an admission by Riverside, an admission made repeatedly in its answer, in its answers to interrogatories, in its deposition testimony.
Mr. Becky, why do you think, given the length of time that had passed between the original thyroid surgery and Riverside's eventual termination, why did they suddenly then decide to start, or perhaps in January, why did they suddenly then decide to start interfering with her FMLA rights, whatever they may have been?
I don't know why they started interfering at that point. There isn't anything, when she completed this project in January that she'd been working on, and when that was finished, they said, well, now you need to start working 8 hours a day at the hospital.
Because, you know, there's sort of a contradiction in a way in her arguments and what I would describe as a bit of a, I don't know, a difference in the kind of legal theory one would think about. Because on the one hand, as I understand her argument from you, she is essentially saying, after some period of time after the surgery, I've been working a full week anyway, maybe not all of it on premises, some of it on premises, some of it off premises, but I'm functionally working as a 40-hour-a-week employee. Well, on that theory, she doesn't need FMLA leave. She doesn't need leave at all. What she might need, and I don't see this theory in the case, is something more like an Americans with Disabilities Act accommodation, because with, let's say, the accommodation of being permitted to work a couple of hours each day at home, she can do the job fully. But I don't see an ADA theory here. This is an FMLA case, and we wind up with this, you know, this bizarre, you know, the statement in her complaint, you know, I don't think I need this, and this argument that arises over whether she can accomplish anything by applying for intermittent FMLA leave where she doesn't believe that's really at all responsive to her needs. It gets the case very bollocksed up.
Pardon?
The case strikes me as very bollocksed up because of these sort of contradictions in both theory and fact.
Well, you know, I think we know that she was working at the hospital less than 8 hours a day for a 15-month period of time. And that was obviously a change. And then 4 years before the surgery, she had never had any attendance problems.
And so what you're essentially saying, I guess, on that point is, okay, fine, have it your way. It all has to be on the premises. In that case, she needs FMLA leave in the amount of an hour a day or two. So I don't know how much you were asking for, but some amount of time per day. Is that a fair characterization?
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I mean, the fact that she's taking it seems to be clear under the circuit's cases is certainly notice to the employer, certainly notice to the hospital that she has a problem and that she has a medical problem. You know, this is not simply, you know, saying, gee, I'm sick or whatever. It's, you know, I can't work. I get fatigued. Adjusting to medication following my thyroid removal surgery. I think that's clearly notice, but the lower court here viewed the doctor's note, which came much later in March of 2004, viewed that as notice. And I suggested in the context here, the doctor's note was certification. It was an adequate certification. It was certainly totally responsive to what Mr. Hansen, who was Janet Ridings' supervisor, said. He said, I need some sort of note from your doctor that you can't work 8 hours a day. And Janet said, well, tell me more. You know, tell me exactly what you need. He said, no, I'm not going to tell you anything. I've told you what I've told you, and that's it. So she brings him something that is totally responsive to his request. And then he demands that she apply for intermittent leave, now, which everybody agrees she wasn't entitled to.
Everybody, well, your opponents functionally concede that, too. Is there any way she could have, though, simply interpreted that as a request for recertification or as a request for an application for some kind of leave, crossed out the word intermittent, somehow said, I'm not going to do intermittent, but I'm going to be responsive to you. Instead, she just does nothing, which, of course, is what spirals into the termination.
I don't think employees, and clearly the law doesn't require employees to be experts. It requires the employers to administer the program, and I mean, it's clear that you don't even have to mention the FMLA to be entitled to benefits. I don't think that she can be, in a summary judgment case, held to just figure out that, oh, well, despite the fact that Mr. Hansen wrote this three different times in three corrective action reports, you must apply for FMLA intermittent leave. Oh, well, he didn't mean that.
Well, what did the form say, though?
Was Pardon?
What did the form say? Was the form that they asked her to complete exclusively for intermittent leave, or was it a generic form that covered all forms of FMLA leave? If it was a generic form, she could have submitted it to her doctor and had the doctor circled the appropriate category of leave that was warranted under the circumstances and turned it in, and she didn't do any of that.
No, that's true. But again, the hospital, there's no evidence that the hospital ever requested certification.
Well, they gave her the forms.
Pardon?
They gave her the forms.
They gave her the forms to apply for leave.
Right. So,
but she's already on leave.
Well, they asked her to certify the need for it pursuant to the normal policy, which is to use the form, and that's perfectly permissible under the FMLA, and she refused to cooperate with that.
Well, but I think in this instance, I mean, it was very confusing what the hospital was doing, but I think the doctor's note was already certification.
Was
now,
the
if
form,
it was incomplete.
Was the certification form confusing?
Pardon?
Was there anything confusing about the certification form that she was supplied and asked to complete? Was the form itself confusing?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Then why didn't she complete it? And that would have certified her need for the leave, her continued need for the leave.
Well, it seems to me that's simply an argument that the certification was incomplete, that the doctor's note was incomplete. And as this court, I think, said in Kaufman, the employer can't win by just arguing that the certification's incomplete. You have to go back and say, we need some more information. But I suggest the hospital here already had all the rest of the information. It knew when this started. It knew it started in February of 2003. The fact that it had gone on for a lengthy period of time strongly suggests that a doctor is not going to be able to say, this will end on, May 23rd, 2004, or whatever.
Was Ms. Ridings asking for a certain number of hours reduced each day, or would it vary from day to day?
It varied from day to day.
And did the doctor's report give any indication of what that would be, whether it would be a couple hours a day, 1 hour a day, or occasional?
His note did not, but of course her work history indicated precisely what it was going to be. I mean, it varied.
Sounds a little like intermittent leave, doesn't it?
No. Intermittent leave is...
I know intermittent is the full day. I understand,
two or three days off.
But it is intermittent as opposed to reducing it to a six-hour day or a five-hour day or something like that.
I'd like to see him into rebuttal time, so
sure.
Thank you very much.
That's fine. Mr. Darch?
Good morning, Your Honor. Douglas Darch appearing on behalf of Riverside Hospital. Your Honor, I think you've kind of identified what was going on here.
But I have a problem from the hospital's point of view also, and that is the opacity of its requests for her. There are these emails in the record, for one thing, the one from... Brent Malik, I would avoid to Kyle Hansen. I would avoid the references to medical documentation. You know, essentially hiding the ball, saying they're not going to do this, and then something in the record again saying that they're not going to tell her what it is they need from her. So that bothers me for one thing. And the other thing that bothers me about this debate that's going back and forth between the two of you about the admission that she was already on FMLA leave is the fact that because we're on summary judgment, we need to take the facts and the inferences in the light most favorable to the non-moving party. And even though the interpretation that you've suggested, which is that you're characterizing it now as FMLA leave because you've been illuminated by Ragsdale and so on, I mean, maybe that's an inference, but I think another inference is that, yes, you knew this was all FMLA, you knew about the thyroid stuff to begin with, and we're on summary judgment, you know, and we don't draw inferences in the light adversely to the non-moving party. So those are a couple of issues I have.
Thank you, Your Honor. And let's start with the first one, the Brent Malik email. The facts of the matter are that Brent Malik's email was not sent to Ms. Ridings. Instead, Ms. Ridings received written documentation from the hospital, which she signed. And I'm specifically looking now at Ridings Deposition Exhibit 19, which is a corrective action report dated March 19. It does not address the FMLA at all. Instead, it says, you are required to work 8 hours a day. And she responds by that, I asked questions about what that meant, work 8 hours a day, what kind of note do I need from my physician? And that is the note that the debate is about. What does she need? On the following month...
But the problem is, these things start coming to a head in March of 2004.
Actually, it's not until April, but okay.
Well, I think they start coming to a head in March because that's when her doctor's note, which is appended to her brief at page 31, that's dated March 22, 2004, which follows up an initial exchange that she has. Here's this March 19 exchange that you're talking about.
Yes, ma'am.
And she's asking, she writes, I requested clarification on what was needed from my physician. That information was not provided, so she goes anyway, and she gets this note from her doctor. And we know from the March 18 email from Mr. Malik that they're not really telling her at that point. Now, as time goes on, we get the later forms that say fill out the FMLA form requesting intermittent leave. And here, you know, as Judge Sykes points out, you know, she's gotten the record, the form, and maybe she should have ignored that advice. On the other hand, maybe she shouldn't have ignored that advice. I don't know.
Well, I think the chronology that's laid out, Your Honor, in the four disciplinary notes that are in the record dispel any claim about or any doubt about what was going on here. Ms. Ridings had hit the jackpot. She was working part-time at the hospital. She was getting full-time pay. She's getting an argument with her boss about her work situation, which, as you pointed out, looks more like perhaps an ADA violation. She abandoned that claim. There was an ADA charge filed with the EEOC. She abandoned that. There was also a sex discrimination.
No,
I
understand.
She's hit the home run.
Well, I think that's an
offensive.
And
she's got a lawyer guiding her.
No, I mean, I don't know that that's the right way to look at it. She finishes this big project in January. And where is it that somebody says to her, we will accommodate you if you need some FMLA time off every day, an hour a day, 2 hours a day, but you need A, certification from your doctor as to how much time you want off, B, recognize that you're not going to get a full salary. If you're working three-quarter time, you're going to get a three-quarter time salary. Perfectly legitimate.
That happens, and it's documented on Ridings Deposition Exhibit 15 on April 21st. And if you'll, and it says flat out in that FMLA paperwork requesting intermittent leave needs to be completed, and it says also if you don't do that, you could
right.
be terminated.
And that's the problem with this intermittent. I think she thinks that she's being set up to fail because she doesn't need 2 days off here, 3 days off there. What she needs is reduced hour leave, which in the FMLA world is a different kind of leave.
Except that if no matter what kind of leave she takes, she is going to suffer a reduction in pay.
So what? I mean, well, I mean that part doesn't bother me.
But, Your Honor, it bothers Ms. Ridings, and she is the actor in the case. If you look at what she handwrites on her corrective action notices, both on May the 10th and on May 13th, she says this is an unlawful termination, and what is being done here is the intent of treating me as an hourly employee. She puts that down twice on the 13th. She knows where this is headed. She is going to take a cut in pay, and by golly, they're not going to do that to her. It's over her dead body. She's not going to turn in the forms. And if it means she gets fired, fine, she's got a lawyer, she's going to sue.
Again, I understand that that's your interpretation of these facts.
It's right
in the
doctor.
I don't know if it's the inevitable one, though.
Well, if she says, you talk to my lawyer about this.
Well.
And they're not contesting that she objected to having her pay cut.
She's objecting to this characterization of intermittent leave. Now, from some distant planet, you know, it would be really nice, you know, if people somehow worked better together and there had been better communication. Unfortunately, there wasn't. So here we are with this debate about intermittent versus reduced hours versus whatever. If all of these corrective action reports had said Janet did not turn in FMLA paperwork requesting reduced hour leave by, I don't think we'd even be here. I mean, she either would have done it or she would have failed to do it. You would have fired her. No one would have been able to do anything.
Except, as Judge Tinder points out, because she's flexing the days that she, the hours that she wants off on every day, she now comes to this court and says, oh, it wasn't reduced leave. It was intermittent leave because I'm going up and down.
He didn't say that. He said,
the question suggested that that was a possibility. I submit to you, given the fact that she's being advised by counsel, who, I would point out, noticed that there was a typo in the medical in the FMLA policy and says, hey, you can't make me turn in an FMLA leave because your policy says only the employee can require FMLA certification. Obviously a typo, because the employee isn't going to turn in an FMLA demand that FMLA certification be turned in. Only the employer is going to do that. So we've got the Wile E. Coyote out here looking at the situation, trying to figure out how we can keep full-time pay, part-time work, don't comply with what the employers request, which is reasonable. Take, for example, your statement, Your Honor, that, hey, we wouldn't be here if we didn't have the word intermittent in here. If the paperwork had said turn in an FMLA certification.
For reduced hours.
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor. If it simply said turn in an FMLA certification, period, and did not describe what kind of leave was being requested, would we be here or not?
I don't think so.
And I submit the answer is we would be here because the judge made the factual finding in his decision. And it's in the footnote. He said it is in footnote 8, and it's a factual finding that no one disputes. It is apparent from the record that Ridings did not intend to submit the certification.
I think that is disputed. Judges aren't supposed to make factual findings.
That's because it was uncontested, Your Honor, in the cross motions for summary judgment.
She didn't intend to certify to file the wrong certification.
But there's only one form. It's a generic form.
The
doctor can designate the type of leave she needs.
I understand that, too, perfectly well.
All right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Betty.
Just briefly, as everybody knows, this is an appeal from summary judgment. And when the district court wrote that there is nothing in the record to indicate that Riverside intended for Ridings to take any other leave than reduced schedule leave. And that is simply wrong. There are three written corrective action reports written by Mr. Hansen and approved by his superiors who say something different. That is clearly some evidence. And then the district court goes on to say, oh, well, it's just a mistake by Hansen. And so Hansen makes a mistake, and the rest of the people in the hospital approve it, and Jack Reddings gets fired.
As Judge Sykes pointed out, though, had they not handed the form to her, your case would look different. They did hand the form to her. You agree with that?
That's right.
And she could read the form, and she could see that it was just, you know, her doctor already filled out the one note. Why wouldn't he have gone ahead and filled out this other form?
No, but they gave her more than that. I mean, they gave her a whole application form to apply for FMLA leave.
Sure.
Not simply a certification form.
Why is that wrong?
Because the instructions, I mean, first of all, I think they had the adequate certification. And beyond that, the instructions repeatedly were, fill this out to apply for FMLA intermittent leave. And Janet doesn't have to be an expert.
Not on the form, though. It's the same form for everything.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the same form she filled out when she had her surgery, isn't it?
Yes.
So she was familiar with the form.
Pardon?
She was familiar with the form and had, in fact, used it previously when she requested FMLA leave
for
surgery.
That's correct. But I think it made no sense to her to apply for FMLA intermittent leave.
But it made no sense to her to apply for any FMLA leave because she didn't want FMLA leave. What she wanted was to continue to work reduced hours as an incident of her salaried status. And that was the argument she was making to her bosses.
But again, there is no evidence that she didn't work 8 hours a day for the hospital. She didn't always work 8 hours a day at the hospital.
So the fight is about where she was going to do her work. The fight is about where she's going to do her work. The fight was not about whether she was entitled to or actually requested FMLA leave because she never actually did.
Well, but I think it was the hospital that you know, frankly, bollocks the thing up. Thank you very much.
All right. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.